You are now listening to The Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black Culture Amplified.
Hello and welcome to Writing Black. I am your host, Maisha Kai, lifestyle editor at The Griot. And this week we have a really incredible guest, historian, author, just a brilliant mind, Peniel Joseph, who wrote this book, his latest, I should say, The Third Reconstruction. Peniel, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, Maisha, thank you so much for having me.
You know, I always like to explain to our guests like why we started this show. And, you know, it's really so much about the craft, you know, the craft of writing and really like how identity intersects with the craft of writing. And, you know, as a historian, as an educator, an academic, you're in a very, I think, specific position to discuss this, particularly as it pertains to exploring Black history, which we're at such a obvious, like a crucial moment in American history and in exploring Black history, which is American history, right? So the Third Reconstruction, how did the concept for this book come about?
You know, I think a lot of historians and cultural critics and writers and artists started to talk about the Third Reconstruction right around the time of the Donald Trump election. Reverend William J. Barber has his own Third Reconstruction book talking about Moral Mondays and sort of how the country needs to go back to its commitments to Black people that have always sort of been expressed commitments, especially since the Civil War, but not actually commitments that have been guaranteed, right? So you think about Jim Crow segregation, you think about the abuses against Black women, children, men, just chronically, even after the first Reconstruction.
For Black America, Reconstruction remains a blues-inflected tone poem about the perils and possibilities of Black humanity, democratic renewal, and the pursuit of citizenship and dignity amid the ruins of a world ravaged by racism, war, and violence.
So I think like many folks, I as a historian, thought about Reconstruction, both the second Reconstruction, my mentor, Manning Marable, the late historian at Columbia University, had written a book called Race, Reform, and Rebellion, Black America's Second Reconstruction. He had written that book in 1982. So, and I knew Manning, I worked with Manning. Manning was a real inspiration. And of course, you know, passed away in 2011, right on the eve of the publication of his Pulitzer Prize winning biography of Malcolm X. And so I thought about the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s as the second Reconstruction, but I really went back to the first Reconstruction. And so in a lot of ways, this book grows out of that, grows out of like sort of, and these are, you know, technically when I went to graduate school, my fields of expertise were sort of like Black history, 1865 to the present, Black feminism, which is really there in the book, which I had the opportunity to take with Sonia Sanchez. And then, you know, sort of, you know, Black political intellectual history and social movements, and also comparative Black nationalism. So I was always very interested in Africa and the Caribbean. I'm Haitian, so I was always very interested in that. And so in a lot of ways, the election of Trump and MAGA sort of forced all of us to sort of rethink our preconceptions about the country. And I think in doing so, I got deeper into the period of Reconstruction. Although I will say over the last, say, 15 years, even as I'm a historian of the civil rights movement and sort of the 20th century, I had been really reading a whole lot on slavery and Reconstruction just for my own elucidation. You know, so I was reading, and especially, you know, the stuff by Tavolia Glimpf and Dinah Ramey Berry, especially the stuff by Black women and sort of women authors, in addition to the Eric Foners and the Stephen Hans. So I had Crystal Fleming. I had been very much interested in this. Crystal Feimster. There's just so many different folks who have influenced me and influenced sort of not only, you know, my reading, but how I read. You know, I think that's the whole thing. You know, like how I read has really changed in that way because of the influences of the authors who I read.
You know, I love that. I don't think. You know, we talk a lot about how we write on this show, but we don't talk a lot about how we read. So I actually love that. Can you get a little more specific about that? How has it changed? How are you reading now?
Yeah, I think I read in a lot of ways against the grain of sort of the archives and what you're reading, and you're reading for things that are seen and unseen in the voices of the people who are being centered in those stories. So you're always aware of sort of what's there, but also what's missing, and some of those missing sort of ellipses we're never going to get back again, right? You know, they're permanently gone. Some of it we could sort of imagine and conjure, and I think that's what's so good about sort of being in the space of Black feminism, student of Black feminism, reading alongside within the context of the Black radical tradition. And I've been, you know, super fortunate to be on that journey for decades and decades. So I've been able to just read extraordinary work, but that has helped me read and interpret differently, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that in a way, the book is a product of that in terms of, and I think I was always wanting to come out with a book like this, but it's very hard. Not everybody has the genius of some of these you know, writers and these authors who you read and admire. Mm-hmm. But what they do is, you know, you can't do. So you're trying to do it. You're trying to do what you can do and be comfortable in that
Yeah. I mean, as they say, comparison is the thief of joy, right? You know, you mean, you just gave us a laundry list of incredible thinkers. And fun fact, I used to teach Eric Foner's daughter when she was in elementary school. I did up near Columbia. So that's a little off. A lot of people don't know.
Maisha, one person who I should mention is Sadia Hartman.
Yes.
You know, I think Sadia Hartman has been really influential for me and, you know, thousands mm-hmm. of others. But I think, you know, reading not just, you know, Lose Yourself, but Scenes of Subjection, you know, which is really about racial slavery and sort of the Civil War and the aftermath, the way in which she reads against the grain and the way in which she looks at sort of the problem space, to use a political theory term of sort of Reconstruction, was really, you know, influential. But there's been, a ton of people who I really, really, you know, love and admire, you know, in this space, you know, Kendra Field, Rhonda Williams, Uhuru Williams, you know, there's just so many different authors, Hanif Abdul-Rakib, mm-hmm. Kiese mm-hmm. Layman, Tressie. Yeah. Macmillan Cottom, just
three of my favorites, right?
You know, in addition to bell hooks and Audre Lorde, and some of whom are really, you know, in the book, especially by they're throughout, but really the chapters on dignity and leadership as well.
Black women and queer activists have historically been some of America's most committed Reconstructionists. Audre Lorde, the Black lesbian feminist, theorist, poet, and scholar activist, is an exemplar on this score. Her commitment to a radically inclusive yet politically expansive vision of abolition democracy set her on a course in the 1960s and 1970s that would, in striking ways, come close to being fulfilled by the BLM movement.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about that, like the layout of this book. I think, you know, sometimes we open these books and it's like there's like 82 chapters and you're like, okay. You kept this. I mean, it's a substantial book, but it's concise in terms of just like how you decided to structure this conversation. You do this in 6 parts. Why, you know, and I'm going to read them off really quickly. The introduction is A Nightmare is Still a Dream. One is Citizenship, followed by Dignity, Backlash, Leadership, Freedom as the conclusion. And while I know those all spoke to me in specific ways, why was it important for you to structure the book this way? Why was this the framework for this conversation?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Maisha. In a way, this book, again, as somebody who, and you know this, when, you know, those of us who are coming from academic backgrounds, whether we've taught at the university or not, by academic backgrounds, I mean the backgrounds we all came from, where at the dinner table, they're talking about politics, they're talking about culture and art. So that's really academic, sometimes people call it intellectual backgrounds. That is both liberating, but also it's confining, right? Because you a lot of times the framework that we're taught in, people expect you to stay within those boundaries and within those lines, you know? So if you're an anthropologist, if you're a Black woman feminist, if you're a religious scholar, if you're a cultural critic, a policy wonk, you stay in your lane. In a way, I wanted to get out of my lane in writing this book. And so what I wanted to do, and those six parts were really, I wanted to, you know, sort of, this is how I conceptualize this period through all of my readings and research as a student, you know. And one of the reasons I think I'm still passionate and excited about all this is that I remain a student. And, you know, I'm in awe of so many different writers. I like, you know, Lawrence Ralph, Imani Perry, you know, Eddie Gloud, you know, so many different folks who I just read, Martha Jones, and I read fiction as well, right? And so I think that this period of time, I wanted to be able to produce something that was a learning and teaching tool, but also something that provided people hope. But also, you know, because I had been in the Black feminist space for so long, I thought I could really contextualize why it was so important, Black women's roles, not just in the movement for Black lives, but I really anchor, even in the introduction, Angela Davis. And what does Angela Davis mean for three generations of folks, you know? And what does it mean, the essay about Black women and slavery written from prison? And how does that impact what we think of as abolition democracy, a term that Du Bois gave us? But I really then look at, you know, sort of Ida B. Wells, you know, Angela Davis, Audre Lorde, then a contemporary Black sort of feminist activist framework as well. And what does it mean when we listen to that and we let it influence how we think about narratives and narrative wars and cultural wars, right? So I wanted to thread that together, where you get Stacey Abrams and Amanda Gorman, but also Ida B. Wells and Audre Lorde, you know, Ruthie Gilmore, Kathy Cohen, all at the same time, and how that threads through these three periods of Reconstruction, and the kind of, I think, really transformative hope that gives. Nicole Hannah and the 1619 Project, right? And so, so I was really happy to be able to do that, because in a lot of ways, as a writer, so much of that has always been in my head, and it becomes, you know, you want to get, as you know, you want to get it out.
I've often heard it said, and I've often said myself that, you know, great writers are often great readers. I mean, well, they almost inevitably are great readers. And we will be right back with more Writing Black.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black fashions, Black mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the Griot mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
All right. Welcome back to Writing Black. You know, one of the things, like, you know, going back to just the history itself, I find a lot of people don't talk about Reconstruction enough, even though it was like this ridiculous, obviously this hugely pivotal moment for us in particular, let alone refer to a second Reconstruction, right? So, I also studied a lot of Black history and Black feminism in college, you know, and it's so interesting to me, you know, obviously everything's cyclical, right? So we talk about third wave feminism, you know, we've had, you know, Ibram X. Kendi talking about, you know, the new Black Renaissance, you know, all these kind of like cycles. And with each, obviously there's a different, what is the word I'm looking for? Pain point, a different risk level involved, you know, in the conversations that we're having. Your book, of course, comes at a time we have just gone through. I mean, it's almost as if the last two, I mean, we've just gone through an incredibly traumatic 2 years and then an incredibly traumatic 4 years before that for different reasons. Why do you feel like it's so important to have this conversation now? And do you feel that there's, you know, do you hold out hope for some breaking point where the promises that are made in each of these phases of Reconstruction, to your point, do you hold out hope for that? Do you see these, you know, pushing these conversations as a way forward, or do you see it as a way to kind of arm us personally, by us, I mean Black people and those who are supportive of Black people, with that information?
You know, Maisha, I think it does both. I think it does both, because I think one of the arguments of the book is how central Black people are. And then when you get really specific, Black women have been to rescuing democracy, saving democracy, having an expansive vision of democracy, you know, alongside certain men like Frederick Douglass were really good. You know, so there's definitely been solidarity, but I wanted to highlight, because a lot of times we don't think about Black women in that context. But no, I think it is hopeful. I think we have to come to terms with, and I think we have done this the last 2 years, but we're facing a real backlash, that when we push for Black citizenship and equality, when we center the voices of Black people, but then Black women, Black queer folks, we are actually saving democracy and expanding democracy. Just like when we attack those voices, we're diminishing democracy, right? And so a lot of what I've tried to do in terms of the third Reconstruction is sort of show, especially for people who are never gonna have the opportunities that we have to read all these big books, these big, huge books, you know, whether it's Eric Foner or Stephen Hahn or Martha Jones, or, you know, so many different folks who write big, great books, but most of the public doesn't read it. So it was trying to braid that argument in a concise way that shows why it's so pivotal, and also push back in the sense of, you know, when I look at Reconstruction from 1865 to 1898, following people like Martha Jones and others, you know, I talk about, you know, Black women's centrality to that period, you know, to that period and to the politics of that period. I center Ida B. Wells as really more than just a criminal justice reformer, but really this person who's a democratic visionary, small d democracy, who's an activist, who's a social scientist, who's a data collector.
Ida B. Wells, a journalist and anti-lynching crusader, emerged as one of the nation's most ardent Reconstructionists, helping to advance Black power by organizing political clubs and educational networks and creating civic spaces that viewed women as equal partners on the road to freedom.
You know, I do all of that to sort of show that, you know, what we, the stories we tell, it's kind of like you see Hamilton, and I've seen Hamilton with my daughter and all this stuff.
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being the self.
We put Black actors in Hamilton, but a lot of times we won't talk about our own Black founding mothers and fathers. You know, who where we don't have to invent Ida B. Wells. She exists.
Well, right. I was going to say, know, where's the Ida B. Wells? Maybe I need to write the Ida B. Wells musical. All right.
No, absolutely.
And I'm a Chicagoan.
I would definitely
want. You say Ida B. Wells to me, and she's like, you know, writ large in my life, like
absolutely.
Everywhere I am.
Ida B. Wells Barnett. No, you should write it, because I would want the person who makes the ton of money for the Ida B. Wells Broadway and all the subsidiaries, I want it to be a Black woman.
Make it splashy. You know?
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Numbers. Exactly. Exactly. You know. So yeah. So I wanted that to be in one book that shows you and braids that history together, and also shows us how it continued through these three periods of Reconstruction. Obviously, there's been more than those three periods, but those three periods tie together, you know, 1865 to 1898, 1954 to 1968, and then really 2008 to the present, because I think this period is continuing, and we see both the progress with Obama and BLM, but also the backlash with January 6th, Trump, MAGA, critical race theory, voter suppression. So we see it all in one mix.
Right. And it's this really sick kind of replay of exactly what happened.
Exactly.
And then, as summer began, new generations of social justice warriors marched arm in arm with grizzled veterans of earlier movements. Together, they dreamed of a future capable of healing a past resurrected that May in the last gasps of a dying man, George Floyd, who called for his mother at the hour of his death.
Our ancestors faced the same thing. And sometimes we can't make an exact comparison, but we are facing some of the same trials and tribulations that they faced.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing, you know, this era's version of that. Well, I can't wait to hear more. We'll be right back with more Writing Black.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black fashions, Black mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the Griot mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
And we are back with more Writing Black. You know, and now it's like you start to think about things like, so how would that same backlash, you know, how does that manifest now in terms of, you know, a diminishing populace or a threatened populace trying to control or contain or suppress, you know, other voices? And I'm like, does that look like, you know, a cyber thing? Does it look like, you know, what does that look like now? You know, which is terrifying. Absolutely. That's terrifying to look over your shoulder.
Oh no, it is terrifying. You know, Maisha, it is terrifying. I always tell my students now that I teach at University of Texas that, you know, for those of us who used to imagine, you know, what would it be like to have lived back then, whether it's the 1960s or the 1860s, you're in it, you know, you're in it right now. And, things have gotten so bad when we think about voter suppression and legislation to prevent folks from teaching about Black feminism and Black history and slavery that, you know, anything is possible in a negative way, although anything is also possible in a positive way. But the election shenanigans, accusations of Black voter fraud, this was happening in the 1860s, you know, as early as 1866 and 1868. Black folks are getting an opportunity to vote even before the ratification of the 15th Amendment. And there are allegations of voter fraud. There's violence against Black people going to the polls, which is why so many have to organize basically a martial, military, paramilitary style movement, which includes Black men and women to protect themselves in the polls. And we're, you know, victims of violence in, you know, Georgia, Mississippi, Texas, throughout the Confederacy for not just exercising voting rights, but also for building up Black churches, Black schools, the kind of civics that we had manifested. I mean, South Carolina, we were majority Black in South Carolina. If things had been allowed to progress, we would have had a Black governor in South Carolina, two Black senators,
Yeah.
We, you know, Mississippi, we were 60% of over 26 of the 70 something counties, and we were running local places in Mississippi. And I will have to say, and I sort of show this in the book with the backlash chapter, one thing people don't understand is that when we think about Jim Crow segregation and what happened to us, we were overrun by overwhelming numbers. So we fought, you know, and we organized in the hundreds, sometimes single digit thousands in local municipalities. We were overwhelmed at times by forces of in the 10,000s of militia, of right. violent terrorists,
of government sanctioned violence,
police officers.
Yes.
Governance, yes. State sanctioned violence. Yeah. So one thing I wanted to show too is that we have been consistent, and we haven't been cowering. We haven't been cowards. We've just been flat out outnumbered, and we weren't out organized. We weren't out hustled. We somehow were not lazy and right. didn't work hard right. enough for freedom or to protect our freedom. There's not much you can do if you're one person or even 100 and there are thousands out there armed with guns. There's not, I mean, right. you're not going to win that. Right. You're just not going to win it. And so that's what we were up against during Reconstruction. And we still managed to have archipelagos of freedom and sort of wealth and justice that we managed to carve out for ourselves as well.
Well, that's a lot to think about. We'll be right back with more Riding Black.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the GRIO Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black Fashions, Black Mendations, and everything black. Listen today on the GRIO mobile app for all the black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
The GRIO Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the GRIO Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the GRIO mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
And we are back with more Writing Black. And you talk about like the population and just those ratios there, you know, what do you think of like, you know, this, the like reverse migration movement in terms of people? I mean, you're in Texas, right? What do you think of that? You know, like there, it isn't argued. I'm thinking of Charles Blow off the top of my head. He's not the only one, but been argued that we should consolidate, right? That we should move south and make it happen. But, you know, it's like, I talked to my partner and he's like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. You know, what do you think of that? From a historical perspective, because I do think that there is a really interesting argument there.
Yeah, I think there is an interesting argument. I think the South is always going to be, in a way, Black people's homeland. And I'm from New York City by way of Haiti. So that's a deeper South when you get to Haiti and Cuba and other places. I think that Black people are always moving where they think the opportunities are. And I think that what's happened with the gentrification of the cities or the sort of colonization of cities and urban areas is that Black people have been pushed out. A lot of people don't understand that the reason they're able to be pushed out is a lot of times we're not able to own land and own homes. And even when we are, I can think about East Austin, the east side of Austin, Black people have been pushed out because the property taxes get too high. Their houses need repair, and nobody's going to give you a zero interest loan so you can take advantage of all these white people moving in and all this investment happening in your own neighborhood. So I think that for the time being, for the foreseeable future, Black people are going to be returning to the South, especially cities like, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, Richmond, Virginia. There's different places that have a lower cost of living than the frontline cities. So like Austin, for instance, has a high cost of living, not as many Black people as Houston, as Dallas and some other spots here in Texas. So I think, you know, people are moving to, you know, Jackson, Mississippi. They're moving to parts of Alabama and other places where they feel that they can buy a home, make a living, and they're organizing for political and economic power. That doesn't mean we can't be a presence or force in the cities, but there is this reverse migration going on. One thing I would say in terms of Black political power in the South, a lot of times the Southern states are the worst mm-hmm. states for voting rights.
And, right, that's the discouraging
the part.
Yeah, that's very discouraging.
And we will be right back with more Writing Black.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black Fashions, Black Mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the Griot mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
And we are back with more Writing Black. You know, this is usually the part of the interview where I ask you, you know, where I would ask my guests, like, oh, well, you know, what do you read? What inspires you? But you've given me a bevy of that information. And I hope that our listeners are taking notes. I know I'll be playing it back and taking notes on a whole bunch of stuff that I wasn't up on. But what I do want to talk about then instead is, you know, this is just your latest book. I assume there will likely be many more to come, hopefully. But when we talk about, you know, as writers, as thinkers, as in your case, being a historian as well, and making sure that word continues to be passed, that we, particularly now, you know, with this anti-CRT, it's reflexive. I always roll my eyes when I when I say CRT now. That's terrible. No, with this, you know, push against telling Black history as American history, this push against telling it accurately. What do you feel a responsibility in that? If so, what does that feel like? How would you articulate that?
Oh yeah, no, I definitely do. And I, you know, I talk about that in chapter four, in the leadership chapter. I talk about 2020 mm-hmm. and how it unfolded and how all of us were being utilized and called upon for our expertise. People like, you know, Ibram Kendi and Alicia Garza and others became bestsellers, Layla Ali, White Supremacy and Me, Robin DiAngelo.
I mean, you watch some people whose books had come out years before become bestsellers. I'm thinking about like Brittany Cooper, you know, I'm like,
absolutely, yeah. You know, and so I think that, yes, I mean, trying to utilize whatever voice I have in the public for this kind of pedagogical evolution, I think that the whole country is undergoing around, and I call these narrative wars about like, what is the story we tell to each other about ourselves, right? And I think the reason why the 1619 Project irked certain people so much, certain white people, but other conservatives who are not white so much, is that it told us a different story. It told us a different story. And that story can still be a story that leads to some kind of consensus, because one of the problems that we face post-Shelby Holder is that we don't have a consensus. Once they ended voting rights in the way it had existed for the previous almost 50 years, we've really lost the national consensus on Black citizenship and dignity that, however imperfect, was better than MAGA and Trump. Okay, so mm-hmm. However imperfect that was, it was actually better. So we need a new consensus. So I think the role of all of us who are educators and who are interested in being part of that debate is to tell a different story. And that's what I try to do in the third Reconstruction, and prioritize different actors, but it's still towards building consensus, because there's no reason why we can't say, you know, Angela Davis, Tamika Mallory have great conceptions of freedom and democracy that we can't get behind, right? The only reason is just like what happened with Justice Ketanji where, you know, they're asking her crazy questions. You know, she's this overqualified Black woman, overqualified, more qualified than any of those senators, more brilliant than any of those folks asking questions. Yet they're poking and prodding just because of racism, and they don't like her identity. That's why, you know, and they don't like her whole life. You know, many of those folks would be upset that she's interracially married, that she's got this beautiful Black daughter right there, you know, daughters, and that she's confident enough to think that, yes, she deserves to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. And that's why I get into this idea, Aisha, with the Reconstructionist versus Redemptionist, that polarity still carries the day. It'll be 160 years in 2025 since the end of the Civil War. And really, 160 years later, the country is divided between Reconstructionists and Redemptionists. The silver lining is this: there are actually more Reconstructionists than ever. That's the truth. In another historical context, if we pitted Trump against Biden, Trump would have won decisively in another historical context, okay? So the very fact that you can have not just Barack Obama, but Black Lives Matter, that you can have Stacey Abrams, who's unbelievably brilliant, that you can have these Black women who are shaping
this. You can have Cori Bush, you can have, absolutely.
It's remarkable, and that should give us hope, even as we know that there's this anti-democratic oligarchy, there are racists, there are white supremacists who want redemption to win the day.
All right, well, stay tuned for more Writing Black.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the GRIO Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black fashions, Black mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the GRIO mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
The GRIO Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the GRIO Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the GRIO mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
All right, welcome back to Writing Black.
The third Reconstruction, America's struggle for racial justice in the 21st century. I'm looking forward to finishing this book. I'm gonna, because I admit I did not finish it yet.
No, thank you. I understand people week. Are overwhelmed.
But, you know,
what one book, Maisha, that I didn't say I love is Heather McGee, The Sum of Us.
Say it again for me.
Heather McGee, The Sum of Us.
The Sum of Us?
It's called The Sum of Us. Yeah.
Heather McGee, The Sum of Us.
Black woman. Yeah, it's everybody should read that. It's really talking about how racism impacts all people and why we can't have nice things because of racism. Great book. Yeah.
Oh, that's a, you know, now, really that's a whole other like conversation we'll have to have you back for. Yeah. Why we cannot have nice things. Peniel
Joseph. Because of racism.
Thank you. Because of racism. Yeah. Right. Yes. And sexism too.
But, and sexism. Yeah. Queer phobia.
And homophobia.
All those things prevent
that,
us from having
that,
nice things.
Right.
All of it. Yeah.
Peniel Joseph, thank you so much for joining us on Writing Black. This was a really, really great conversation. I have to say, on a personal note, you know, this brought me back to I felt like I was back in the classroom at Sarah Lawrence with, I don't know if you know Kamozi Woodard, but like, I just felt like I was back there.
Kamozi is a friend, yeah.
Yes. And I just was like, you know.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant man. I'm so blessed to have studied under him. So yeah, you know, I have to say thank you so much for that, because it was just very affirming. And I hope that our listeners feel
the
same.
I enjoyed it.
And we will hopefully have you back, because you are prolific, my guys. So hopefully we'll have you back.
And we will be right back with more Writing Black.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black fashions, Black mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the Griot mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
And we are back with more Writing Black. Well, you know, it's really rare that we have a guest on with such a breadth of knowledge as Peniel Joseph, who's going to give us really basically a virtual book list. But I still have a few of my favorites to share, as I do every week. You know, I love to do these thematically. You know, I mentioned Charles Blow. If you have not read, I believe it's The Devil You Know is the name of the book. You should. That was really what I was basing our conversation on reverse migration on. But also, you know, How the Word Is Passed by Clint Smith. This was a bestseller, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. And, you know, another guest of ours here on Writing Black. And admittedly, I'm a little biased on this guest because he's my cousin. But Keith Boykin, Race Against Time, The Politics of a Darkening America. Both these books, you know, take a unique perspective on political history in the United States and how it's gotten us where we are. Obviously, there's a breadth of books, like just a huge, you know, span of books that you should dig into if you want to know more. And at this point, we all should. We should all be trying to get as much of our real history as we possibly can, because that is how the word is passed. And as Peniel said, the narrative, we need to remain in control of it. So that's it for this week of Writing Black. Thanks so much for joining us for this week's episode of Writing Black. As always, you can find us on the Griot app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Introducing Dear Culture with Panama Jackson on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Bring your friends for the shenanigans and stay for the edutainment as Panama debates culture wars, Janet Jackson versus Michael, Black fashions, Black mendations, and everything Black. Listen today on the Griot mobile app for all the Black culture conversations you don't want to miss. Also available wherever great podcasts are heard.
The Griot Black Podcast Network is here, and it's everything you've been waiting for. News, talk, entertainment, sports, and today's issues, all from the Black perspective. Ready for real talk and Black culture amplified? Be inspired. Listen to new and established voices now on the Griot Black Podcast Network. Listen today on the Griot mobile app and tune in everywhere great podcasts are heard.